Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Good morning. Indeed, today is the day. It is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. This is Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I'm going to jump into those two headlines right there at the end of the news at the top of the hour and highlight a story for you that I don't think the mainstream media is very likely to highlight. And that is this. The first American to officially have been recognized as non-binary has actually now rejected transgender ideology. He now recognizes that he is a man, that he has always been a man. His name is Jamie Shoup. You should actually connect with his story. He has been legally living as neither male nor female since 2016, when a judge allowed him to be recognized as non-binary. And he now describes his so-called gender identity as a fraud, and has rejected all ties to transgenderism, and says that I am and have always been male. And so, you know, we have talked at length about gender dysphoria. We have talked at length about how we need to pray for, minister to, and extend grace and truth to folks who are suffering with gender confusion and gender identity confusion. And we're going to continue that conversation today when David Murray joins us from Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary. He and I are going to actually talk about what it means to be a man and what real Christian masculinity is, true masculinity, not toxic masculinity, certainly not abusive masculinity. And that's probably going to lead us into some conversations about sex abuse, the sex abuse summit that the Pope has called for the Roman Catholic bishops in Rome. The erosion of trust in the church and its leaders, not only in Roman Catholicism, but maybe more recently here in the United States of America, in our largest Protestant denomination, which is the Southern Baptist Convention. And you all know that I'm a part of the Southern Baptist Convention. I worship at a Southern Baptist church. And so I echo the concerns of those who want to see the most vulnerable among us protected. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that today as well, what local churches need to do. So all of those conversations and more up next right here on Mornings with Carmen. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, joined now on Skype by Dr. David Murray. David is a professor of Old Testament and practical theology at Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary. He's also helping to raise a new generation of Christ-like men. And so, David, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you, Carmen. Just listening to your news headlines there, it just shows the need for more and more biblical teaching about Christian manhood, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's just start right there, because I think that as soon as Christians begin to distinguish Christian manhood from what the culture is advocating in terms of the eradication of sexual identity and yet elevation of it as an idol to whom we must all bow down, help us understand, when you say biblical manhood, when you say what it means to be a man in terms of Christianity, give us a little sense of what you're talking about.
You know, in essence, Carmen, it's about being like Christ, who had that unique combination of what seems like extremes, but when brought together is just a beautiful picture of masculinity and indeed humanity. You know, he's got that strength and yet he's got that gentleness. He's got the ability to speak truth to power, and yet he's the kindest, compassionate counselor to victims. He can mix it with tough fishermen, and yet he inspired many women to follow him. He has that ability to say hard things, but in a way that is compelling and persuasive and not at all abusive. I think we could go on and on, but what I see today is the problem of having one extreme at the with the lack of the other. And the end result is horrible imbalance, either on the one hand, a very weak, almost pathetic manliness, if you can even call it that, and on the other hand, a horrible, abusive manliness that has no compassion or tenderness at all. So we're trying to really emphasize Christ-likeness and the beautiful way he balances these seemingly opposite characteristics in the one person.
So I'm going to jump right in with a question that I will hear, certainly as a woman. I will hear people rebuff this conversation and say, this is about elevating men above women. This is about advocating for, you know, some sort of hierarchy of relationships. Can you speak to the reality that we're talking here about men and women equally created in the image of God and yet with distinctive roles?
No, and I understand the critique, because there have been way too many examples of what you're mentioning there. Way too many men in power, in the church, in state, in companies have taken advantage of these positions. And, you know, justice needs to be brought to bear in the church, in the state. And personally, I welcome the recent interest in and advocacy for such, both in the state and in the church. Yes, there are extremes in the Me Too and Church Too movement, but there did need to be a day of reckoning for men who have abused that power and who have used it to crush and to manipulate. So I welcome that. But, you know, the problem with society, especially in our social media driven ages, you end up going to the other extreme. Men don't have any voice. They don't have any rights. They themselves become victims of injustice. And so, you know, again, we've got to just get back to the Bible, not be influenced by caricatures or culture, but by the example and teaching of Christ. And that is, to me, the crying need of the day, both in the church and in the wider society.
And you have really developed a unique approach to how to address that need. And so let's start the conversation about Christian Man Academy, and then we'll continue that conversation after we take a brief break. But tell people what the Christian Man Academy is and where they can find it.
Yeah, I was watching last year as you know, the conversation was developing in the culture about masculinity, especially watching the rise of Jordan Peterson and his voice, his message, the appeal this had to so many men, so many Christian men. Indeed, many of the men in my own seminary have been influenced by him. They admire him. They go and hear his talks and watch his videos. And I hugely admire Jordan Peterson for many, many reasons. But he does not have a distinctively Christian voice. I think there are errors in what he teaches. So I thought, well, why not bring a distinctively biblical, Christ-centered voice into this? Like, take the best of what Jordan Peterson is highlighting, but, you know, ground it entirely in the scriptures, not in psychology, not in, you know, history from myths and things like that, but really ground it in the scriptures and avoid, again, ending up in an extreme. So he's meeting a great need, but I don't think as well as it can be met. And I think the danger is that without that Christ-centered focus, you know, he could do a lot of good, but could also do a lot of harm. So I started the Christian Man Academy just last week. I launched it, actually, and I've been really just amazed at the response of men to it, signing up for watching the videos and following the curriculum. And I've got a lot to learn myself, so I hope it'll be a good community of learning and that we will develop a distinctively and attractive biblical masculinity.
So again, friends, I'm talking with David Murray. He's a professor at Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary. Don't let the word Puritan nor the word Reformed scare you off here. This is a very grassroots conversation, and this academy is for everybody. And so we really want you to check it out, Christian Man Academy. David's website is headhearthand.org, and he and I are going to continue this discussion in just a moment.
He was a rock. He was the one the boy ran to. 'Cause when he said the words.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am Carmen LaBerge. I am talking with David Murray. David is a professor of Old Testament and Practical Theology at Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary. He's also the author of a blog called headhearthand.org, and he is offering up a free Christian Man Academy, and I want you to check it out at christianmanacademy.com. David, let's jump back in, and I feel the need, the urge, because I have been to the blog, to congratulate you on the new addition to your family. I feel like it's like just yesterday. Is this possible?
It was Friday, actually. Yeah, we had my eldest son was married, and that was our first family wedding. So it was a wonderful day. Yeah.
So I kind of want to just ask you this question. So you think about your son, you think about the fact that he is now the head of his own household, that God has created in those two people a tiny new little civilization. And that much of what you're doing in the Christian Man Academy is shepherding the hearts of other men in the way you have already shepherded the heart of your own sons. And so maybe just talk with us about what you're doing from that perspective. You really are extending to others what you've done in your own household and what you do in the academic environment every day.
Well, Carmen, thank you. It's, you know, raising sons is a trial and error process. You learn a lot through your own mistakes. But my eldest son is now 23. I've got a 21-year-old, two girls, and then a little 5-year-old boy who was a 10-year late, came after 10 years after the girls. So there's a wide range there of experience and knowledge. And I'm just, you know, a lot of what I've learned is through raising these children. And also seeing the young men coming into my seminary here, our seminary here. And just, you know, I think what I've seen in my own boys and in the young men around me is just a huge need for practical instruction. You know, there's quite a lot of good teaching out there at a theoretical level. Good theology, good teaching, good instruction. But I think what I'm seeing amongst young men and my own boys too is like, you know, just tell us what to do. You know, what does it look like practically, down to earth, every day, to be a Christian man, a Christian husband, a Christian father, a Christian employee, a Christian church member? And that's what I'm trying to do with Christian Man Academy, is really bring it down to earth and show very practically the steps that they can take to learn and practice being a true Christian man. And yeah, my son, he's in the Marine Corps, so he's got his own manliness. But, you know, he's also managed to combine a lovely tenderness for his new wife. And it's lovely to see that Christ-likeness coming out and that lovely combination of strength yet gentleness.
So for folks maybe who aren't big readers and might be scared that a seminary professor is offering a free course online and they're like, I'm nowhere prepared for that. Tell people about the format of Christian Man Academy.
Yeah, you're right, Carmen. Men are not reading an awful lot. Maybe seminary students are, but most men are not. They're very busy. Young men are not reading that much. So I decided to make it video-based, and most of the videos will be 3-4 minutes long. We put out a couple a week. I've got 50 lined up and writing another 50. It's just when you start getting into the subject, you realize there's just so much to teach, so much to learn. So, yeah, hopefully that men will find that, you know, 10 minutes a week to watch a couple of videos, and there's always a call to action in it. Some study questions. I know men already are meeting to discuss it, fathers and sons and Bible study groups, breakfast groups. So just hoping that these short videos will start a conversation and will help men begin to, you know, flesh this out in their daily lives. And You know, my passion is that I'll never hear about it in this world, obviously, but that lives will really be changed, that marriages will be changed, that homes will be changed, that children will be raised in homes seeing, you know, biblical Christ-like models of manhood. And that means men who are going to stand up for the weak, and they're going to care, and they're going to be kind, and they're going to love, as well as lead and show strength and show courage. And just be that Christ-like man that, with the help of God's Spirit, they can be.
So a couple of additional questions, David, because I think that there's probably folks listening who are saying, well, that all sounds great, but I could never afford to enroll in a seminary course. It's going to be way too expensive. So give them the really good news today.
Well, it doesn't cost anything. This is free. I'm not trying to make any money out of this. I just want to put out good teaching that's available, accessible freely to as many as possible, and just try and watch what God can do with it. And, you know, what I see in young men is they want to be men of God. They want to be what God wants them to be. They just, at times they say to me, I just don't know what that looks like. And therefore, I thought just modeling that on video and helping them to see what it looks like. And over time, I really believe these young men, with all their passion and desire to honor the Lord, can really change what even our culture thinks is a real man, what is a true man, not just a true man of God.
If you've just joined us, I'm Carmen LaBurge. My guest is David Murray. We are talking about Christian Man Academy. You can check it out at ChristianManAcademy.com. There's a lot of confusion in the culture today about what it means to be a man. And there's lots of young men in the culture today who were not raised in homes with fathers and certainly not raised in Christian homes with fathers. So if you're wondering how Christian guys can know what God wants from them and what it looks like to be an authentically Christian man, we certainly want you to check out ChristianManAcademy.com. David, in the couple of minutes we have left, I would just appreciate your reaction to, because I've read your blog, so I know, you know, sort of where your heart is on the conversation related to sexual abuse in the church. Let's talk about how that is not Christian manliness.
Yeah, Carmen, this goes right to my heart, because I've been involved in many cases within churches where women have been abused and assaulted, and churches are a disaster generally in dealing with it. And I actually lost my ministry in the year 2000 in Scotland over standing up for five young women who were assaulted by a prominent churchman. But I don't regret that for a minute. You know, that's what true manhood is. And yet, you know, we're 20 years on, and still the church has not learned what it means to stand up for victims of oppression and abuse of power. And it's just, it's grievous to me that it takes newspaper reports and newspaper exposures to actually bring about change. But if that's the way God chooses, you know, I want the change. I would rather it came through biblical conviction. But if change is coming, that's going to protect a lot more women in the years to come. And I'm just earnestly praying that this will be the turning point. When men, you know, start listening to women, start listening to victims, and stop assuming that they know best, that they go out and get training from people like, you know, Diane Langberg, Rachel Den Hollander, and many other victims advocates, and really learn the pain of this and be Christ-like in their response to it, and show that the church is a real refuge and a safe place for women, especially broken, hurting women, that they can trust and they can find Christ-likeness there, not just in the preaching, but in the practice of Christianity.
Mm. David Murray, thank you so much for your witness. Thank you so much for your willingness to not only share with us here today on Mornings with Carmen, but with everybody at Christian Man Academy. So again, friends, you can check out David's blog at headhearthand.org and also christianmanacademy.com. When we come back, I'm gonna talk a little bit about the policies and practices in my own congregation related to being sure that the most vulnerable are protected. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. I just want to tell you quickly about my own experience in terms of serving in churches across, more than 20 years, and actually having served in paid roles with responsibilities broadly for children and youth ministries where no background check was ever conducted, versus the Southern Baptist Church, of which I am now a member, which in order to teach Sunday school, I had to, you know, go through the same process that's required of everyone who has access in any way, shape, or form to children on our campus or youth. And that is not only to, you know, fill out a teacher application or a volunteer application, depending on what your role is going to be or the opportunity that you are seeking to participate in, but that then you submit yourself to a background check. You complete a child safety training course. You get equipping training from the ministry leadership. And if you're approved as a volunteer, you then go on to these periodic meetings where all of that is updated annually. And so let me just encourage you to ask the question, what are the policies and practices in your own congregation or association or denomination? And are specifically as they relate to how the most vulnerable people are kept safe on your church campus, at your church camps, during your church events, when your church participates or sends people to attend things elsewhere, what are the not only policies but actual practices in place in those environments? And let me encourage you today, if you are asked to submit your information for a background check before you're allowed to work directly in any capacity related to children, I don't care if you've been a church volunteer for 50 years and it just finally occurred to your church that they ought to be doing background checks on people who are taking care of kids in the nursery or volunteering in Sunday school classes or driving the church bus or going with kids on mission trips or going on a mission trip where children are going to be served because you're visiting an orphanage. If you are asked to submit to a background check and you resist that at all, I want you to pause and say to yourself, why am I resisting being sure that everybody who participates as a volunteer is thoroughly vetted? Like, why do we resist that? And so let me encourage you to encourage your church if you don't already have policies and practices in place. There are lots of organizations and agencies out there helping churches do this. And if you need some information to connect with one, just email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. I'll tell you who we use. I'll tell you who others use. I'll tell you the ones that are recommended by folks I trust. So you can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. If your church needs help knowing what policies they ought to have in place related to the protection of the most vulnerable among us. Sins done in darkness are going to be brought to light. And so let's be sure that we are people who are not only interested in justice, but interested in grace and mercy and love. Let's take a quick news break and then we'll be back. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. It occurs to me that not everybody knows how to access what God has said. And so every month here at Faith Radio, we actually give away Bibles. And right now we are giving away the Truth for Life Spurgeon Study Bible. And you can enrich your daily study of God's Word with sermon notes and illustrations from Charles Spurgeon. If you would like to enter the drawing for the copies that we're giving away this week, you can enter that drawing at myfaithradio.com. The Bible is your way of accessing what God has said. And so let me encourage you to be actively in the Word of God. If you want to know what God's perspective is on things that are happening in the world, you want to know what God's perspective is on your life, you want to know who God is. Like, that's the starting point, right? We need to know what the character of God is. And how he has interacted with his creation and with people throughout human history. So that's how you find it out, friends. And so if you want to enter a drawing for the Bibles we're giving away, you can do so at myfaithradio.com. A quick Garlow report, and then we're going to talk with Ruth Kramer. We're going to turn our attention to the international news from Mission Network News. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen.
Christian nonprofits opposing same-sex marriage are being flagged as hate groups. This is Jim Garlow. If an organization has nonprofit status with the federal government, likely they're listed in the GuideStar website, one of the nation's sources of financial information about nonprofit organizations on the Internet. Any interested persons can go to the website to peruse the tax returns of nonprofits for important information on programs and fundraising. 46 organizations listed are known to oppose same-sex marriage. Recently, a statement across the top of their page flagged them as a hate group as designated by the Southern Poverty Law Center. GuideStar received 41 letters expressing disagreement with the labeling. They've removed the statement for now. GuideStar acknowledged there is a deep, nuanced conversation to be had with Americans of all political, cultural, and religious backgrounds regarding how we address and identify hate groups. We'll keep you posted.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. We are joined again today by Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. She's back to bring us up to date on some things happening around the world. Ruth, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen.
Good morning, Carmen. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Let's start with Syria. Bring us up to date on the situation in Syria.
Well, you know, this is a situation that has been going on for about 8, going on 9 years now, where you've got multiple groups that are really just kind of vying for control over that country, and there aren't really any good guys involved with that because you've got all of these different alliances and people that used to be enemies and now you're friends, and so you're, you know, the enemy of your enemy is your friend, kind of a thing is going on here. And the fighting in this country really hasn't settled down very much. What you're seeing is in certain areas, like in the east side of the country, ISIS has been forced into a corner. They're like trying to defend their last square kilometer of what they used to have as a caliphate. So that appears to be a good thing. But on the other side of the country, you have fighting over the border, where you have the Kurds and the Turks that are fighting over control of the area in the Aleppo government. And in that area, you have the city of Afrin, which is up in the north on the furthest corner of the country. What we had been hearing is that all the fighting all over the country had been sending refugees to the south into Lebanon. And then as things were starting to push ISIS out on the east side of the country, people were thinking about going back. And people that were in the north side of the country where you had the Turks and the Kurds going, they were thinking about going back. And then they started, and then ministry partners that are involved with the folks on the ground in the refugee camps in Lebanon started to hear that distress calls were coming in from the Afrin area. That's up in the north. And right now what you have is armed militia groups that have taken over this region because it's fairly lawless. And so they are going out and they are hitting stores. They're hitting anybody that's out on the streets. They're robbing people. They're taking their money. They're taking their vehicles. They're taking anything they have on them. They're breaking into homes, taking food. And so you have people who are stuck in the Afrin area sending distress signals to their family members who have made it out into the refugee camps in Lebanon and asking for help. Now, when they send these refugee these distress calls, they're trying to do this with equipment that's being powered by a generator, which means you need diesel fuel, which has been stolen by all of the militias. So it's very spotty. The contact information is not always accurate. Our ministry partner on the ground is Horizons International, and they're saying the situation is causing quite a lot of concern. Because it's getting to the point of starvation now for the people who are trapped in Afrin and can't get back out. It's kind of a 1-2 punch situation because they're, you know, trying to get friends and family members in the refugee camps in Lebanon to send some money so that they can try to survive. But these refugees that are in the camps in Lebanon have just weathered a 1-2 punch of the winter storm that destroyed the camps. So you had massive flooding in some of the camps. You had snow and ice coming down on the tents that just kind of caved in the roof because the weight was too heavy. And so these people now are just trying to put their shelters back together, and they lost things because when the floodwaters came through, it swept stuff out of their tent. So they're starting over too. So it's a difficult situation right now in what's happening in Syria, and we just kind of wanted to bring it to people's attention. It's not over. It is a situation that people are tired of hearing about. But there are a lot of opportunities right now when you have just the Christian groups that are responding to share the hope that they have, to share what they have amongst the refugees. And it's opening a lot of doors because people want to know, why are you doing this for me? You don't know me. You don't owe me anything. Why are you doing this for me? And so the ministries have time to build relationships, and then they start talking about the hope that they have in Christ. But they can't do it alone. And so it's going to be a thing where they're just coming out and saying, hey, if you can help, it's still an ongoing situation. If you can help by praying, fabulous, because it is spiritual warfare. But, you know, right now we're looking at a situation where they have been, you know, pouring into these camps for 8 years, and it just doesn't seem like it's at a point where they can pull out, because they're finding new camps every single day.
Mm. Well, and the numbers are pretty staggering. You know, Ruth, when I think about 2 million refugees in Turkey and 1.6 million refugees in Lebanon, and internally displaced camps of some 200,000 people at a time. And when you say that they're discovering these new camps, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about like me and my family, you know, camping out in a tent. We're talking about 200,000 people gathered together trying to survive with nothing that you and I would consider reasonable accommodation in terms of what's required in the middle of the winter. And so if folks want to help, are we directing them to Horizons International?
There are a lot of ministry organizations that we partner with who are actively involved there. I would say Horizons International is one. Triumph and Mercies is another one. Heart for Lebanon is a really good one, too. Those three, we have actually visited these partners in Lebanon, and we see what they're doing, and we can vouch for what they're doing as legitimate organizations and ministries. Just keep in mind, you guys just went through a polar vortex, you know, a couple weeks ago. It wasn't quite that cold in Lebanon, but imagine being outside with really thin tarp, with maybe your clothes packing the walls for your insulation, and a small space heater as being the thing that keeps heat on in your tent, and trying to weather that storm for 4 days, plus freezing water and rushing water that is flooding the camps, turning everything into a mud pit, with 9 or 10 people in a 10-foot square tent. That's kind of the situation that you have in most of these refugee camps in Lebanon. So it's not an easy situation. It is very, very dire. And just coming alongside some of these ministry partners, when you see how much the families appreciate what these ministries are doing and how open they are. They are spiritually really seeking truth, and their kids are extremely excited and happy to have relationships with these Christians, because they're seeing a different side of Christ than what they were taught to believe when they were in Syria.
Hmm. Ruth, let's come to this hemisphere next, and let's talk about Haiti. Friends, you're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, continuing my conversation with Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. God of mercy, sweet love of mine. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am your host, Carmen LaBurge, and I am finding out from Ruth Kramer at Mission Network News what is happening in some hot spots around the globe. And we're going to turn our attention to Haiti. You all know as well as I do that Haiti is the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, that it suffers from widespread hunger and discontent. We know what happens in Haiti from time to time, but I'm wondering if folks know what's happening right now. So, Ruth, what is happening in Haiti?
Haiti is a country that makes me want to weep, because they just don't ever seem to catch a break. The stories that come out of Haiti are always hard. And so, you know, if you have ministries that you are connected with that are down there, pray for them. Come alongside them, walk with them if you can, because they need so much support. There's so much stuff going on in Haiti. Poverty is at the root of a lot of the difficulties that you have there. And it's always hard. I mean, they're always in the middle of the natural disasters. They don't seem to be able to recover from one thing before another thing hits. And it's all come to a head right now. Haiti is not a stranger to manifestations, or, you know, that's what they call them. We call them riots, because people are just tired of the prices of everything going up. They're tired of their money devaluing and just basically not being able to afford to live. You had a fuel shortage earlier, and it was a severe enough fuel shortage that people basically were looking at other ways to get around because they just weren't going to be able to take care of filling their vehicles or really much of anything. And some people had, were able to see far enough ahead to try to get some diesel fuel ahead of time because they don't know when the next time is they're going to be able to find diesel fuel. You have hospitals in situations that are very difficult because they don't have power, they don't have access to medicine. And now with these protests taking place that have been ongoing probably for the last 14 days, there's very little likelihood you're going to see new stuff coming in because a lot of aid groups are now saying, we don't know if we can travel in there because it's so difficult. You've got Canada and the U.S. basically issuing do not travel warnings because of the unrest there. And really what it's coming down to is the protesters now are calling for President Jovenel Moise's resignation. He has already said he's not going to step down, but he's been accused of corruption, of running off with all kinds of money that was coming in for aid, tied to, a lot of the issues are tied to the soaring inflation that he said he was going to control, but obviously it hasn't gotten better. And you're seeing a lot of the frustration just boiling over right now. So Saturday, there was this pause in the rioting. The barricades may have been moved a little bit so that people could get around downtown because during these manifestations, everything comes to a grinding halt. You are not going to be able to get anywhere, and you probably can't anyway because they set the barricades on fire. But in this case, on Saturday, everybody just said, okay, we're just going to take a moment to regroup. And then they went out and tried to gather what food, water, and fuel that they could in that time of tense calm because they're expecting more this week. So you've had all of the stories of mission teams that are in Haiti. You've got other missionary groups from Canada that were wondering whether or not they were going to be able to get out. You had some pastors that were kind of trapped in there and then decided to stay through the riots. So there are some legitimate concerns about people that are down there who are weathering through the storm alongside the Haitians. What's interesting is usually when you have these riots, they seem to be concentrated and usually kept to the capital city, Port-au-Prince. In this case, the rioting has gone countrywide. So our partner for Haiti with Love is saying that it is spread all the way up into the north and Cap Haitien, where they are. It typically doesn't get that far. But the riots are causing a lot of concern for their team because it can get out of control really, really fast. They have a short-term mission team of nurses whose help they desperately need to kind of bring things alongside and boost what they're doing at their medical clinic. And the team is right now just kind of looking and saying, okay, what do we do? How do we make a decision on whether or not we're going to be able to go? And the For Haiti with Love team is saying, really, right now, we can't tell you. It's changing hour by hour. It's changing day by day. We can't tell you. So we're going to have to make that call that maybe the day before you guys are going to come. And so just be praying for the ministries in Haiti. This is a really ugly situation. When you have mission teams that are coming alongside, it's a little bit of encouragement and respite for the teams, the ministries that have been located on Haiti and dealing with this stuff day in, day out for years. And when the respite doesn't come, it's very discouraging. So be praying. This is a spiritual warfare kind of a thing. According to most of our partners that are down there, you have Compassion International, Kids Alive International. You've got For Haiti with Love. Anybody that has a ministry in Haiti right now is really just watching it and saying, this is very unsettling.
And I think, Ruth, we'll just wrap it up with a new travel advisory issued by the U.S. State Department, which is a level 4 travel advisory, which really says to Americans, do not travel to Haiti due to crime and civil unrest. There is currently widespread, violent, unpredictable demonstrations in Port-au-Prince and elsewhere throughout the nation of Haiti. And due to these demonstrations, the U.S. State has ordered the departure of all non-emergency U.S. personnel and their family members. That means that the U.S. State Department has evacuated the U.S. Embassy, which means that if you were to travel to Haiti right now, there would be no support for you as a U.S. citizen. And so I think that, Ruth, we're right to be really concerned, to be praying for and with those who are on the ground in Haiti, and also to be really seriously counseling those who are considering going. Again, friends, that's Ruth Kramer from the Mission Network News. She joins us periodically to bring us up to date on what's happening around the world. I am Carmen LeBurge. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Let's round out this hour by bringing forward the message that you heard yesterday in your sermon. And so wherever you were yesterday worshiping, I want to know what the sermon text was and what was your sermon takeaway. So you can text me at 877-933-2484, or you can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. So I want your sermon text and takeaway from yesterday. You can text me at 877-933-2484 or email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Our text yesterday, we're working our way through the book of James. I think at the rate we're going, it's going to take us a year. It's a short book, but it's really meaty. And so we have spent more than a month, and we have now arrived at the end of chapter 1. And so if anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. My brothers, show no partiality as you hold faith in our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBerge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.